Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the podcast. It's 2018, autumn, and the Box Set Pod is back. My name is Howell. This is Jamie. And this is Matthew Wandless in London.
Hello.
Starting with the energy of 1,000 bulls. How are we all? Have you missed me for the last 2 or 3 months?
I haven't been able to sleep or bathe myself.
Well, I know, and I must come down and bathe you again, because I know that you don't do it without me. So I'll be there ASAP. Yeah, it's been great. Hopefully you've been listening to my Round the World for Less Than a Grand, slightly misleading title, but also true if you're talking flights. I hope you excuse me for putting that on the Box Set Pod stream, but now we're here to talk telly once more. TV. And we're recording this on the day that Netflix has just had a bumper quarter. They had a bad quarter at the last one, and the share price dropped. With 1 minute to go before the closing bell yesterday, I thought, do you know what? I believe in Netflix. I'm going to buy one more share. I bought one more share, and within 10 minutes, it had risen by about 50% because they had a really good quarter. They put on millions of people, and there's a lot on there at the moment, isn't there? Is anyone else...
Yeah, they've been talking a lot about the films, basically, like the number 80 million viewers of the films, the original Netflix films that have been created.
Right.
And they've been highlighting some of the big wins. The weird thing is, I don't think I've watched a single Netflix original film on there.
Really?
Have any of you? Yeah. Have any of you watched a film they've made?
I've watched a lot of the Adam Sandler ones. They were fun.
Oh, no, you're right. I have seen The Ridiculous Six, and that was heinous.
Well, some of his other ones on there are a lot better than that one. That's by far the worst. And then there's... I saw another one recently that was a big... Oh, the one that Paul Greengrass has done about the...
22 July.
Yeah, the one who murdered all the Norwegians back in 2011. Anus, whatever his name is. And it was that's a very good film. You know, Captain Phillips is one of my favourite films ever, and Paul Greengrass is very good at taking those real stories, isn't he? I think
very good.
So that's worth a watch. And there's just loads more. There was a highlight on my trip, actually, that we were in Kyoto in Japan, and we went to a bar. And he said that it was quite busy, and often bars in Japan have lots of levels but are very small. And I said, oh, it's a bit busy. And the barman said, oh, you can go to the lounge on the second floor if you want. There's Netflix and everything. And we're like, okay. So Sarah and I sat there drunk, alone in this massive lounge, and just watched the first couple of episodes of the animated one, you know, the new Matt Groening one.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Wow.
That's quite funny. That's good.
It's not a bad start.
But even
I haven't watched that.
Even funnier when drunk in Japan and sitting and watching TV for the first time in a month. What else? What else is going on? Oh my god! Sorry, have you watched Norseman? Either of you?
No, I saw it's up on Netflix. It looks quite. It's a comedy, right?
Oh, yeah. It's honestly, I think it's my favourite thing on Netflix that I've seen in a long time. It's so funny. It's Python meets The Office, and it's so to give you an example, do you know the old Norwegian thing of in the Viking days, the older members of the tribe would be expected to jump off a cliff. There's a name to it called, like, the, I don't know, I'm going to make up a word, but called something like the Hitsgard, and they jump off the cliff shouting Valhalla, and they go to heaven, and the idea is that they get out the way so that the tribe don't have to look after elderly people. And there's this scene where a slave has been asked to take the old people up, and they're all standing there in sort of loincloth, these old men, on the edge of this massive cliff. He's going, okay, so, yeah, if you could all just take your time, one at a time, jump off the edge of the cliff, that would be great. And they're going, and this is a matter of honour? Oh, yeah, this is about the most honourable thing you can do. It's fantastic. And one of them goes, okay. So he jumps off, and they watch him land. And then there's just this 5-minute conversation of all the old men going, you know, I don't think it's for me. I just don't think it's my thing. I think I'm going to give it a miss. And they end up coming up with some deal with the slave who just wants to go back to the village, that they'll go and like live in the woods, and he can go back and tell them that they jumped. And it's just a lot of kind of funny in conversations. It's kind of like W1A, but with the Vikings. So they're all talking about fairness all the time and stuff, trying to build a society. It's just really good.
There is a lot, I do like look at that, and there's a lot, you know, loads of really good stuff. I think the last sort of 2 months you've been away, Howell, and interesting, some good British stuff that we should get. We should tuck into,
like what?
The Bodyguard. The Bodyguard was huge over here. I mean, it was it was genuinely event TV for 6 weeks.
So this wasn't the documentary about Whitney Houston that I watched on the plane that's called The Bodyguard.
No. Okay. This was a thriller written by the guy who did The Line of Duty, similar kind of style and similar kind of twisty-turny thriller. There was also Killing Eve, which we need to talk about as well. This is written by the writer of Fleabag, and it's based on a book as well. And it's a very interesting, funny, dark, assassin-based thriller. This we need to talk about. There's also been, we're going to talk about Maniac tonight, which is definitely worth tucking into. I've just started Succession, which is on Sky Atlantic and stars Brian Cox, and it's directed by Adam McKay and produced by Will Ferrell, and it's written by Jesse Armstrong, who wrote Peep Show. There's so much good stuff that we need to really dive into.
God, I'm behind the times. Dead.
Yeah. Matt hasn't seen any of these.
Haven't seen a single one. I haven't watched anything on Netflix for ages.
Really?
I discovered I could get Amazon Prime straight on my TV.
Right.
And let's see. There's a couple of things. Actually, you know what? That's not true. I watched all of Line of Duty. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Happy Valley.
Oh, yeah. On there now, isn't it?
Which I had missed out on entirely. And I watched 2 series of that. That was great. But then I haven't watched anything new for a while, I guess. I fell out of love with Better Call Saul, and I still haven't finished whatever series they're on.
Okay. Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Let's pause on that for a moment, shall we?
Go
on. Let me just finish my recap quickly.
Go on, sorry.
We started watching Sharp Objects, and then it disappeared off Sky, and I haven't managed to get back to it since then.
Sky.
So I was 2 episodes into it, and I was really enjoying it.
It's bloody brilliant.
Like it was going to be absolutely horrific, but
it's bloody horrific and brilliant. It's got to be finished. You've got to find a way back in there.
I will find a way. It's on top of my priority list. I've been doing a retrospective. So I've been ploughing through Parks and Recreation, which had said I would never watch.
Ah. Oh, why would you say that to yourself? Who says that?
I think you might have said it to us, actually.
I have said that, I think, probably. I watched the whole of the first series.
And it's not very good.
Because people told me that I would eventually like it.
Yeah.
Didn't.
Yeah.
And I still have a problem with the format. It's the same problem I have with The American Office and Modern Family,
mm-hmm.
which is that they abuse the documentary format.
Right. They look at the camera too much. Yep.
No. It's not that they look at the camera too much. It's just that there is no way that documentary would ever be made.
Mm-hmm.
So they are simply using the storytelling shortcuts that a documentary affords you to make a show that doesn't make any sense. I have let it go because it's fucking funny.
Oh, it's just the best. Tell us what it's like to learn something about yourself. What, you know, your life could have passed without this experience.
No, fair enough. And you know, I hold my hands up and say I was wrong. But have you? Wow. You guys are both Community fans, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know that there is the episode where Pierce is he fakes that he's dying.
Yes.
And he gets them all into the hospital, and Arbed films a documentary about it.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it, I think about this scene where Arbed says, I'm curious about the documentary format because it allows you to tell a compact story by simply having the characters narrate it straight into the camera. And then Pierce says straight into the camera, I'm not actually dying. I've actually brought them all here to act out my psychological vengeance on all of them. And then it cuts back to Ab and he says, see, fish in a barrel. And that's what I think of every time I watch it. It's just like, you are cheating, because they get to do that thing where something happens, one person makes an assumption, and they cut away to another character going, that's not what's happening, this is how I feel.
But don't you feel that they almost move...
such an easy gag.
Don't you think that as time goes on, though, the first series is very concerned with keeping it quite documentary-like and lots of awkward office pauses and stuff, and then they move away from it and it becomes almost like something that they stuck with because they started it, but it moves a lot more like a traditional... you know, one camera comedy almost after the first series. It rattles along a lot quicker.
Yes, but they still get to use the tropes of it, which I think is cheating. Yeah, but I'm fine with it because I like it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I think you forgive it because it is just really funny. It's just bloody funny. And in the end, you're just drawn into the characters and you forget that you're watching. I forget a lot of the times that they're failing in creating a proper documentary reality. Because I just enjoy.
Well, they're
the
not
world,
trying to anymore, as you said.
Well,
they're
no,
not they, trying
yeah,
to.
They give up the ghost a little bit by the second and third series, and by then they're actually enjoying it. They're actually enjoying the process of developing these characters, and it doesn't matter that it's trying to be a bit officey or whatever.
Anyway, big recommendation for that. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, look, for anyone who has just joined this podcast, or for anyone who hasn't watched Parks and Rec, let's just say then. That once again, the theory is proven correct, that if you just listen to what we tell you to watch and watch it, your life will be happier. And now Matthew Wanless has come round to realise that and see me and Jamie as some sort of oracles. That's a lovely feeling. It's very important that Matt feels this contrite feeling in his stomach that he's feeling right now, because maybe he'll listen to us again.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Chuck next. Yeah,
that's right.
But yeah, let's go back to Better Call Saul. Where are you both at? Because Jamie, obviously, we had quite a showdown about a year ago.
Let's make it very clear here. Better Call Saul's first three seasons are at times storytelling perfection. Their fourth season, which has just been released and has just finished, the finale was on last Tuesday on AMC and on Netflix, has been a disappointment, and I'm really sad about that, because ironically, season four of Breaking Bad is the best season of Breaking Bad, and yet the worst season of Better Call Saul is season four. And I'm so disappointed in how slow and incomplete episodes felt. I don't know where you are, Howell. Have you even started it?
I'm about three episodes in, and one of my favourite podcasts is Adam Buxton's podcast, and in his recent one at the end, he talks about how he thinks that pretty much one of the most perfect episodes of TV he's ever seen is halfway through this series. I've not seen it yet, but it shows them, Saul and, what's her name?
Kim
going about their days separately, and it's kind of got split screen. It starts with them split screen or something, cleaning their teeth in the mirror, and you see how they're growing apart from each other. And he thinks it's just about the most perfect thing he's ever seen. So I am... split. Wow. I have been feeling similar to what you've just described, Jamie, but I'm looking forward to that episode, obviously, now. But also, I don't know if it's so starkly different. I feel like maybe you've seen the light. Maybe your relationship has changed. It seems quite similar to the last one to me.
No, I think it is
quite similar to the last one. And actually, well, what you're feeling is the fatigue that I started to experience two series ago.
Let Matthew Wanless get into your head, Jamie.
No. Let me explain. I have analysed this in great detail in my head while this pod hasn't been on.
Yeah.
And I know the issues with this show. I can't tell you how many episodes of season four ended and I went, is that it? Is that the end of the episode? That happened about four or five times. I know why it's not working now. Not one of the big reasons it's not worked this series is because it's getting closer to getting up, catching up with where Saul is in Breaking Bad. And when you get to that point where you're trying to tie everything together, the arc of Saul's character, it slows up the plotting massively. And I think they're struggling with that.
Have you read that somewhere, or is that just cooked up?
That's just cooked up in my when I've been
well,
in
let
the bathroom.
Let me just say. Once again, I have to, you know, let's say three times a year, Jamie impresses me greatly. And I'm reminded why he is actually sometimes a clever human being. And I mean, this man has done some idiotic stuff in his life.
Oh, yeah.
I could list many, many things, but...
Haven't we all, though?
I mean, this one is... You know, I've mentioned it a lot, but when he went to the garage three times because his windscreen washers weren't working, and it turned out he was actually pulling his indicator, things like that.
Okay.
And yet, he can come up with a nugget like that that I don't think he's even read online and stolen from Empire magazine or something. It's amazing. What are we talking about?
It's hard to end a show. Is that what we're calling a nugget?
Yeah. Well, it's an insightful comment.
Thanks, Jamie. The thing is, I had begun to think that. I'd begun to question whether that was the issue, because you start seeing these characters that are getting closer to, you know, I'm even starting to go, oh, I remember now what part this guy had in Breaking Bad. You begin to join the dots and you go, oh, you know what the overriding feeling is now? I know how it ends. That's the overriding feeling with all of the characters. I know how it ends. So I'm watching him play with his kid on the playground and I'm going, I know how it ends, and this scene just makes me sad now.
Mm. Yeah.
Or you know, or will he stay with his partner? Will he stay together with her? Well, I know how it ends now.
Yeah. It's definitely a struggle that I think a lot of shows have. Not just shows, but films do prequels or backstories, you know, it's always going to be a struggle to maintain the show's own identity whilst also tying it in with what's come before it or comes after it even. And it's not that's not the only problem though. The other problem is, and this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you've not watched it, season three, then turn off. But
okay,
Chuck's,
10 seconds, turn it down
ten seconds.
Go.
Chuck not being in season four is a massive loss to the show. Like, he's a huge part of what makes it so interesting, his relationship with Saul, his
Welcome
brother.
Welcome back if
his,
you turned it down
oh,
for 10
really?
Seconds.
I mean, I think it's honest, a huge I was thing. Done with that.
No.
Well, I just think he's a great actor, so that you do miss...
He was a good actor, yes, absolutely, but I was fed up of the constant cycle of, like, oh, we hate each other, and oh, we betray each other, and oh, actually, we really love each other, but actually, no, we have to betray each other, and we're fundamentally different people. It's like, I got it by the end of the last series.
Yeah.
So I thought that ended exactly the right point. The problem I think that everyone is having is that the narrative tricks that they use, which I've highlighted in the past, are simply wearing thin. Like, so many of the episodes, and I have stopped, I can't think which episode I'm on, but we've just lost interest, because I cannot start another episode and be greeted with a 2 or 3 minute montage that's shot without any
silent
dialogue,
comedy. Yeah.
Silence and some kind of obscure piece of music. And it's coming at something from an oblique angle. It's like watching a Rolf Harris cartoon being drawn, you know, where you can't quite see, or Art Attack. That's what it's like. It's like Neil, whatever his name is.
Neil Buchanan.
Like, what's he making? Neil Buchanan. What's he doing with those poles and those things? And it's like, oh,
problem
my
is,
gosh,
in that situation, I have an argument with myself when I'm watching that, though, because on the one hand, I go, well, this is great. It's silent comedy. And why shouldn't they? Why should they write loads of dialogue? It's a visual medium. We've got hooked up in the idea that dialogue has to be smattered all over the place. Isn't this great?
What I'm saying for that, it's just the fact that they lean on it so
well. That's the problem, is that I find myself going, well, if I'm having to talk myself into this argument, there's a problem. I shouldn't be sat there going, wow, wasn't this, you know, there's some shots that they do that like are, you know, 5 minute non-stop shots, and on their own in terms of cinematography, what a great thing to have done. But again, I'm going,
I'm respecting the filmmakers rather than going, well, I'm being carried along into the story here.
Plus, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. I think the devices that they use are brilliant at times, but when they're used in the right way. And the problem with season four is they're using them for stuff that you don't care about. There's a lot in season four. I mean, there's a whole episode almost dedicated to who Gus should hire to build his underground meth lab.
Right.
And I don't know if you've got there yet. No. Or you probably haven't.
Nor have I. No.
Well, I'm not. It's not really a spoiler. I mean,
I don't care about
shit?
That at all.
Exactly, yeah. And it really annoyed me because what it does is it's saying, "Oh, you love Breaking Bad, don't you? Want to know how the meth lab was made?" Actually, no, I don't give a shit how the meth lab was made, and I'm really angry with them because they're using those skills and those techniques that you maybe get irritated by, Matt, for stuff that doesn't need to be used for. When they use it in the right way, and they have used it in the right way in Soul, and they've used it brilliantly at times in Breaking Bad, I keep going, I'll always go back to the first season of Breaking Bad, when he first has to kill someone, Walter, and he passes out, and that plate breaks, and he's got that guy tied down his cellar, and he's going to let him go, but he takes the plate back upstairs, and before he puts it in the bin, he checks to see if the pieces of the plate are all there and there's one piece missing, and he realises that the guy's got it. That, for me, is brilliant storytelling.
I agree with you.
It's amazing.
I wasn't the fan of Breaking Bad that a lot of people were. I didn't put it in the same echelons as my very favourite stuff. But I agree with you that there are parts of that where they use the techniques that I'm talking about to great effect. But now I'm done with them, and I can't, and I don't feel like they've got anything else. They haven't got any more clubs in their bag, and they're running out of shots now. They're just I feel like, well, it's the same thing every time, and I'm done with it. Well, first of all, I'm bored of Mike to the point where I just want him to die, and I know he's not going to. So it's horrible.
Oh, that's hard. I mean,
I can't stand him anymore. Like watching him do his real job. For Gus instead of where he was going around that whole episode where he was being a security guy. It was like, oh my god, this is like, how are you doing this?
I quite enjoyed
that this is what we're going to focus on.
I enjoyed that,
but then I think back to there's an episode, I think it might even be in Better Call Saul, I can't remember whether it's in this or it's in Breaking Bad, where Mike has an elaborate setup where he's got a sniper rifle. And he's hung, the whole episode starts on a shot of a pair of shoes or boots that are hanging from a telegraph wire.
Mm.
And then it comes full circle and basically he shoots the shoes and they're full of sand and something goes on top of a truck and that means he's able to follow it.
Right.
And it's like, it's brilliantly mapped out and you appreciate it. But then it's just, there's too much of it now. Mm. And I do think you're right, Jamie, that they're... Well, maybe I don't know if I do agree with that, because I'm still waiting for them to really ramp up the pace and actually get towards where he becomes the character that we remember and that everything gets back to the beginning.
Oh, because, it's gone way too slow, this series.
In a way...
There's only one series left, though, now.
In a way, it would have been perhaps more interesting for them to have set themselves the challenge of saying, you know, that there is going to be a five-year gap between the end of Better Call Saul and... Breaking Bad, because then at least you don't have that the responsibility to thread the needle quite so much.
I don't think that would have been the way to go. I like what they're doing, but it's just, or I like the idea of what they're doing, but at the moment I just feel like the execution is eluding them.
I mean, I'm guessing Bryan Cranston will just like walk into a shop and buy a Twix at some point, happen to be in the same town or something. But the other thing is that one of the reasons we loved Breaking Bad so much that we always used to talk about was how Vince Gilligan would always kind of throw out anything in the writer's room that would purposely prolong stuff, you know. So he'd go, what is the thing we're waiting for to happen here? Well, Walter White can't be cured of cancer. So, right, we cure him. He enters remission at that point. You know, there's always kind of, he pulls the rug out of his own storytelling. And so you're always surprised. And what we've got used to now in this golden age of Netflix is stuff that's being really clever with form as well. And
And the way that the shows look are being really inventive in a way that they weren't when Breaking Bad came around. So in a way, what Vince Gilligan needed to do with this was challenge himself in terms of the way they put it together, not just the plot. So he should have been aware by now that, you know, having another 15-minute shot of somebody walking through the desert is going to get tedious for the audience. I wouldn't have been surprised if all of a sudden he did an episode that was like a sitcom with a laughter track of Better Call Saul that was a dream or something. Do you know what I mean? Just like mess with the form as much as the story.
And I think part of the problem is that, and we've always scolded shows in the past for this, like Doctor Who and Sherlock, is when you have fans and you're playing to the, and I feel like this series especially has almost played to the idea, oh, this is what the fans like. Oh, look, there's a character from Breaking Bad in here. Oh, it just, oh, look, we're making the lab. It feels too much like, oh, fans will love this.
Yeah, what I'm asking is, do you think there's anything to the argument that this isn't now revolutionary? That if we weren't spoilt with stuff now since Breaking Bad, would we still be thinking this is phenomenal because of the point of difference compared to everything else?
I don't know. Yeah, there might be something in that. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say, but...
Without your own Vince, maybe.
I don't know. I still think he's a brilliant... Him and Peter Gould are brilliant. Whoa!
Wow.
Close the basement.
Was that a cat or the basement?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, no, just going the other room.
It was a big one. You know, there's WD-40 is quite useful for things like that.
It's true. True.
Anyway, the brilliant storytellers, they've messed up Series 4 for me, even though it's been reviewed quite well. I'm surprised, but I'm disappointed. I'm so disappointed. It doesn't mean that Matt's right about Breaking Better Call Saul, because the first three seasons were pure gold.
Can I give you a stat that you might have already heard about Netflix, but I just think is amazing? Netflix made a revenue of $4 billion. Right, this year, $4 billion, and they've made a total profit of $403 million. Can you imagine running a business where you spent that much and actually only brought in that little profit?
It's 10% profit. That's not a bad.
$4 billion. That's how much they're invest. That's how spoilt we are when we're talking about the, you know, time it takes for us to watch this scene that's shot by the best people in the business or whatever.
It is amazing, but I do worry with Netflix. Like, I was listening to John C. Reilly on a podcast talking about Netflix, and he and I think a lot of people in the film industry are worried about how Netflix is, you know, using cinema releases just to get into awards categories and is not respecting the form of cinema. In its kind of the way it's treating the industry and how it's trying to almost break the cinema chain with the way it's releasing content. And I do worry that Netflix is doing the same. It is a strong argument.
I would take that argument if the traditional studio system wasn't still just investing in absolutely massive, obvious, safe bets. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
What Netflix are doing is so much, you know, it's still such a stronger force in the world when you want something that's allowing creative people to make amazing stuff. Compared to what, Avengers 25, it's like, well, come back when you've actually followed their sort of business model and allowed great stuff to be made. That's what I say, John.
Yeah, but you have got shares in the business, though, haven't you?
But the reason I've got shares in it is because I genuinely think that you'd struggle to find a better run business in terms of how they run it and how they
You spend most of your time slagging off the Netflix TV shows, Howell.
No, I don't.
You've been slagging. You've had a pop at quite a lot of Netflix shows for being too long.
Oh yeah, no. That is a byproduct of giving people total creative freedom, but that'll correct itself because they're in competition with themselves so much now. There's so much stuff on there. How many times have you heard someone say in the last year, God, there's so much to choose from on Netflix or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what they're up against now. So they're, when they first announced that they were putting a lot of value in the algorithm that would recommend things to you, I remember us talking about it on here a few years ago, saying what a terrible thing to focus on. Now I realise why, because I really do struggle to pick what to do next. And the little trailer that pops up for, like, Norseman, for example, I watched that because that scene with them jumping off the rock came on. And I went, that is funny. And they're getting really good at picking the stuff that you're going to like and putting it up front. So, yeah, good move them.
I wish that you could turn that off.
Oh, so do I. So do I. I've gone into settings. I've seen if you can do it. But then, you know, that's going to hopefully more often than not help you on to the next thing. So... You know, you just
it's
have
just
to
annoying
mute.
Though. It means there's no way to stop anything. It's like you have to go right out of Netflix if you want to shut it up.
Yeah. And does it? Have you got Apple TV, Matt?
No, I have a Netflix button on my TV.
All right. I don't know if it's the same for everyone. Every way that you use Netflix, but if you don't know what we're on, it does it with you, Jamie? Does it automatically start?
Yeah.
Okay. So should we move on to Maniac then? Or should we save that for next time?
Let's save it. I mean, why don't we come back next week?
All right.
And we'll deep dive into a Netflix original series. Well, it's based on a Norwegian show, but it's original Netflix material, and it's called Maniac, starring Emma Stone, Jonah Hill. And you've watched one episode, right, Matt?
I have.
Okay. There's a tone of caution from Matthew. Right. See you next week.
I tried to be neutral with that.
As usual, you can email us studio@theboxsetpod.com. It'd be nice to hear from you, and it's nice to be back. See you next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.